All right, everyone in Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena, tuning in, this one's for you. Because if you're listening to this, chances are you're all about making things better right here where we live. That's what we're all about too, that whole think and act locally idea.
Absolutely. And sometimes that means looking back to see how folks tackled these questions way before us.
That's what we're doing today. Like way back. We're talking 1875.
1875. That's going deep.
It is. But trust me, it's worth it. We're digging into this essay by a guy named Lysander Spooner. The title's a real attention grabber. Vices are not crimes.
Vices are not crimes.
Huh. Okay. I'm intrigued.
You should be. This piece was kind of forgotten for a while, then rediscovered thanks to a guy named Murray Rothbard.
Rothbard, yeah, I know some of his work. Big on individual liberty and all that.
Exactly, and that's right at the heart of what Spooner's getting at, too. It's all about that fundamental question. Where does individual freedom end, and where does the community's concern begin?
That's a question we're wrestling with all the time, especially at the local level. All the time. And Spooner, being a strong believer in what they call natural rights, the idea that we've got certain rights just by being human, even before any government comes into the picture.
Inherent rights.
Yeah, inherent rights. And being an abolitionist, too, he was really passionate about this stuff. So today, we're going to try to break down his argument about the difference between vices and crimes, see what he had to say, and more importantly, see how it might apply to what we're doing right here, right now, in our corner of Southeast Houston.
Sounds like a plan. Let's hear what Mr. Spooner has to say.
All right, so Spooner lays down this like really clear line in the sand. He says, and I'm quoting here, "Vices are those acts by which a man harms himself or his property. Crimes are those acts by which one man harms the person or property of another."
Okay, so vices are self-harm and crimes are harm to others. I think I'm with him so far.
Right. Sounds simple enough. But Spooner's not just playing with words here. He's trying to establish this solid boundary around individual autonomy.
Autonomy, so like our right to make our own choices, even if you're not the best for us.
Exactly. Think of it this way. Let's say you're at a barbecue, right? You have that extra plate of ribs, even though you know you're probably going to regret it later. That's a vice you're mainly hurting yourself.
Okay, I could see that. But if I snag my neighbor's prized brisket while he's not looking.
No, that's a crime. You've taken something that belongs to someone else. You've caused them harm. And for Spooner, that distinction is crucial. He's saying that a vice, by definition, doesn't involve any ill will or interference with anyone else. It's a personal matter.
So where's he going with this? What's the big deal about this vice-crime distinction?
Well, Spooner argued that without this clear legal difference, without that line in the sand, the whole concept of individual rights starts to fall apart.
Okay, I see where he's going with this. If the government can just decide that any vice, any personal failing, is actually a crime,
then your liberty, your right to your own property, it all becomes meaningless. The government could basically control anything you do, all in the name of preventing you from harming yourself. It becomes this completely arbitrary power.
Right. Because then who decides what's a vice worth punishing? It's all up to whoever's in charge.
It's like he's saying, if the difference between what's bad for me and what's harmful to you gets all blurry, then everything suddenly becomes the government's business. And that's a scary thought.
No kidding. So how does Spooner address this? How does he tackle this question of what constitutes a vice in the first place?
That's where it gets really interesting. He dives into this whole problem of defining vice and how it's not as straightforward as you might think.
I can see that. One person's vice could be another person's harmless habit, right?
Exactly. He points out that a lot of times what we call virtuous or vicious behavior is really just a matter of degree. It's not always black and white.
Like, when does enjoying a beer with friends become a drinking problem? Where's that line?
That's a great example. Or when does a little bit of gossip turn into something harmful? It's not always easy to say.
Yeah, there's no universal rule book for judging every little choice we make. What one person might see as a minor slip-up, someone else could view as a serious character flaw.
And Spooner also points out that what's considered a vice can even change depending on the person, their situation, what's going on in their life at that moment.
Right, like what might be a problem for me, given my personality and my circumstances, might not be an issue for you at all.
Absolutely. And Spooner emphasizes this idea that each of us, because we all have these unique experiences, unique needs and desires, we have to figure out for ourselves what constitutes virtue and vice in our own lives.
So it's about personal responsibility, figuring out your own moral compass.
Exactly. He's saying that no one else can truly know that for us. It's an individual journey.
And this leads to another one of Spooner's big points.
Yeah.
the importance of having the freedom to experiment, even if it means making mistakes along the way.
Right, like the freedom to try things out, to learn from our missteps, to figure out what really brings us happiness or unhappiness, for that matter.
It's about learning and growing as individuals.
He's saying that those so-called vices, those personal failings, they can actually be valuable learning experiences. Mm-hmm. They help us figure out what's truly right and wrong for us.
So it's not about being perfect. It's about having the freedom to figure things out for yourself.
Right. And Spooner argued that if we're not allowed to explore, to experiment, to even mess up sometimes, we're being denied a basic human right. The right to inquire, to reason, to make our own choices, even if they're not always the best choices.
That's a powerful argument. So if figuring out what's a vice is so personal, so subjective, then trying to punish vices through the government. Well, Spooner wasn't a fan of that idea, was he?
Not at all. He saw that as a recipe for disaster.
I can see why. It's like opening a Pandora's box.
He lays out some pretty convincing arguments against it. First off, just the practical reality.
Yeah.
Everyone has vices, right? I mean, no one's perfect.
True enough.
So if the government actually tried to punish every single vice fairly and equally, we'd all be behind bars. It would be impossible to enforce.
Yeah, good point. It would be a never-ending game of whack-a-mole.
And then there's the whole problem of picking and choosing which vices to punish. That struck Spooner as completely arbitrary, totally unfair.
Right, because then it's not really about justice. It's about someone in power imposing their own moral code on everyone else.
Exactly. Who gets to decide which of my personal shortcomings are worthy of government intervention and which ones get a pass?
Like, why is my vice worse than your vice? It just doesn't make sense.
Spooner argued that a government formed by people voluntarily coming together, they would never agree to a system where everyone's personal failings are subject to punishment. It goes against the whole idea of individual freedom.
Because ultimately, we want the government to protect us from being harmed by others, not to protect us from ourselves.
Right. We don't need the government micromanaging every decision we make, every time we do something that might not be perfectly healthy or morally upstanding.
So for Spooner, it all comes back to those inherent rights we talked about earlier, those natural rights that the government can't just take away.
Exactly. And he ties this into the role of government by saying that governments only have the legitimate powers that individuals have in the first place.
Okay, so if I, as an individual, don't have the right to punish you for your personal choices, your vices,
then the government shouldn't have that right either.
Makes sense. I might disapprove of your choices. I might offer you some friendly advice. But I can't force you to change your ways, and neither should the government.
That's Spinner's point. So for him, focusing on crimes, those actions that directly harm other people or their property, that gives the government a much clearer purpose.
It's about protecting our individual liberty, but within the boundaries of equal rights for everyone. We're all free to do our own thing as long as we're not infringing on the freedom of others.
Right. Punishing crimes is about safeguarding freedom. Punishing vices, on the other hand, is about restricting that freedom.
Okay, I'm following you. So how does this all play out when we look at, say, the idea of enticing someone into a vice?
Ah, that's where things get a little tricky. There's this argument that even if an action is just a vice, if you encourage someone else to do it, that should be a crime.
Like, if I convince my buddy to start smoking, even though it's ultimately his choice whether he lights up or not.
That's the idea. But Spooner's counter-argument is that if the act itself is just a vice, then encouraging someone to do it is basically being an accomplice to that vice.
Okay, so I'm an accomplice, but the real responsibility still lies with the person who actually does the thing.
Right. And as long as there's no fraud involved, no one's being tricked or deceived.
And we're talking about rational adults making their own decisions.
Exactly. Ben Spooner says they are responsible for their own choices. Mm. He's a big believer in individual responsibility. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Makes sense. And it reminds me of that legal principle, volenti non fit injuria, right?
Oh, you speak Latin now.
Just a phrase I picked up. But it basically means to the willing, no injury is done.
Which ties in perfectly with what Spooner's saying. If someone willingly participates in something, even if it has negative consequences, they can't really claim they were wronged.
Unless there was some kind of deception or coercion involved.
Right. He uses the example of prize fighting. Two guys agree to get in the ring and beat each other up. Now, you might see that as a vice, but it's not a crime because they both consented to it.
Okay, I can see that.
And he contrasts that with something like assault, where there's no consent. One person is being harmed against their will.
So the key difference is whether there's willing participation.
Exactly. And he makes the same point about consensual sexual relations versus rape, the presence or absence of consent makes all the difference.
So Spooner's laid out this pretty firm line between vices and crimes, but he knew that people would have objections, right? Like, what about all the arguments for why we need laws against certain vices?
Oh, absolutely. And a big one, both back then and even today, is alcohol. People arguing that alcohol causes crime, leads to poverty, all sorts of problems.
Yeah, we hear that a lot.
And Spooner tackles this head on. He argued that the big crimes, the really serious stuff like wars, political corruption, massive financial scams.
The things that really do damage to society.
Exactly. He said those are usually driven by greed and ambition, not by people who are drunk and acting impulsively.
So it's not about being under the influence. It's about a deliberate choice to do harm.
Right. And he even suggested that those big-time crooks, the ones pulling off these elaborate schemes, they're usually doing it with a clear head.
Because if you're drunk, you're probably not going to be a very good criminal mastermind.
That's his point. He says people under the influence are more likely to make stupid mistakes, not carefully planned crimes.
Makes sense. But what about the more everyday crimes that do happen when people are drunk? Like fights breaking out, public disturbances, that kind of thing.
Spooner doesn't shy away from those either. He says we need to look deeper, consider the underlying causes.
Like what's driving people to drink excessively in the first place?
Exactly. He tells the story about a police judge in Boston who was known for sending people to jail just for being drunk in public.
Wow, just for being drunk.
That was the thing. And Spooner saw this as a huge injustice. He felt that these people were being punished for a personal failing, something that deserved compassion, not just a jail cell.
Because maybe they were drinking to escape some other problem, some hardship in their lives.
That's what Spooner's getting at. He's urging us to look at the root of the issue, not just the symptoms.
And this leads into another common argument for vice laws. The idea that things like alcohol lead to poverty, which then burdens taxpayers.
Right, so the government has to step in and protect everyone from the consequences of these bad choices.
That's the logic. But Spooner has some pretty strong counterarguments to that.
He does. He starts by turning the argument around. He says, if the possibility of poverty justifies banning the sale of something,
then it should also justify banning the use of that thing. Because it's the use, not the sale, that supposedly leads to the poverty.
Right. And if using alcohol isn't a crime, how can selling it be?
It's like punishing the bartender for someone else's hangover. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
And Spooner also warns against the dangerous precedent this sets. If the government can ban anything that might lead to poverty, then where does it end?
It could start controlling all sorts of personal choices,
mm-hmm.
all in the name of preventing financial hardship.
Exactly. He argued that a government operating on that principle would have to constantly scrutinize everyone's spending habits, telling us what we can and can't buy based on whether they think it's a responsible financial decision.
It would be a total invasion of privacy.
And on top of that, Spooner makes this very clear point. The government doesn't have some inherent obligation to take care of the poor.
Unless that's one of the specific agreed-upon purposes that people establish a government for.
Right. And he says that while individuals might choose to help those in need out of a sense of charity or compassion,
there's no legal requirement to do so.
Exactly. So the idea that the government can control someone's actions just because they might become poor and need assistance, that just doesn't hold water for Spooner.
He's really pushing back against this notion of government as a nanny state.
He is. And here's another point that really resonates with that whole idea of taking personal responsibility. Spooner argues that one of the biggest reasons people work hard, create wealth, is the freedom to control that wealth, to use it as they see fit.
It's about having the freedom to pursue your own dreams, your own vision of happiness.
Right. And he says if the government starts dictating how we can and can't spend our money, all based on this fear of potential poverty, it kills that drive, that motivation to achieve.
Because then it's like, what's the point of working hard if I can't even enjoy the fruits of my labor?
Exactly. Spooner even uses this kind of provocative image. He says a free person would rather be someone with very few possessions, but with complete control over those possessions.
Than someone who can accumulate a lot of wealth, but has no real freedom to use it as they please.
It's about having agency over your own life, your own choices.
And it ties back into that core idea of individual liberty that he keeps coming back to.
It does. And he even addresses the argument that people should avoid vices in order to better provide for their families.
Like if I'm spending all my money on booze, I can't feed my kids.
That's the idea. But Spooner's response is that no one in their right mind would agree to have a family if it meant giving the government the power to dictate their every personal choice.
Because then having a family becomes this trap, this excuse for the government to control your life.
Right. He argues that people are usually most motivated to provide for their families when they're free to manage their own lives and resources. It's that sense of personal responsibility that drives them.
But if the government steps in and says, "We know better than you how to take care of your family," it undermines that whole dynamic.
It takes away the individual's agency, their ability to make choices, even if those choices aren't always perfect.
So it all comes back to freedom and responsibility.
It does. And finally, Spooner circles back to the central point that we touched on earlier, that a lot of times, poverty is a cause of vice, not the other way around.
Like, when people are struggling, they might turn to things like alcohol or drugs as a way to cope.
It's a way to escape, to numb the pain, even if just for a little while.
And Spooner argues that blaming the vice without addressing the underlying poverty is completely missing the point.
He's saying it's demeaning to those who are struggling to suggest that their personal failings are the root of the problem, when in reality, they might be a symptom of a much larger issue.
It's about looking at the bigger picture, at the societal conditions that contribute to these problems.
Exactly. He asks, does widespread poverty suddenly appear because everyone suddenly becomes more morally corrupt?
Of course not. It's usually the other way around. Economic hardship creates the conditions where people are more likely to make those kinds of choices.
So how do all these ideas from a 19th century essay connect to what we're doing right here, right now, in Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena?
Well, when we look at local issues, like discussions about regulations on businesses, rules about personal behavior,
things that directly affect our lives,
Spooner's framework really makes you think about what principles are guiding those decisions.
It does. It makes you ask, are these regulations really about preventing harm to others?
Which would fit Spooner's definition of a crime.
Right. Or are they about controlling behavior that some people in the community just don't like, even if it's not really hurting anyone else?
That's the key question. Are our local efforts focused on protecting individual rights and property? Or are we trying to legislate morality?
Trying to control personal choices that really only affect the person making them.
And Spooner's work encourages us to think about whether our actions, even with the best intentions, might actually be limiting freedom instead of securing it. And it also pushes us to look deeper, to consider the root causes of problems in our community. Instead of just trying to ban certain behaviors, maybe we should be asking why people are engaging in those behaviors in the first place.
Is it poverty, lack of opportunity, mental health issues? What are the underlying factors?
Because addressing those root causes might be a much more effective way to make a real difference.
So the big takeaway from all of this is that distinction between vices and crimes that Spooner lays out. It's not just some dusty old idea. It's relevant to how we think about individual liberty and community responsibility, even today.
It's about finding that balance between freedom and order.
Exactly. And Spooner firmly believed that people should be free to make their own choices, even if they're not always the best choices, as long as they're not infringing on the rights of others.
It's about trusting individuals to make their own decisions about their own lives.
And that brings us to a question for you, our listener, especially those of you in Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena. How does understanding this distinction between vices and crimes change the way you think about the challenges we face in our community?
How might it affect the way we approach issues of personal behavior, economic opportunity, the role of our local government?
Are we focusing on preventing harm to others, or are we trying to control personal choices? Those are questions worth thinking about. And hopefully this deep dive has given you some food for thought, some new ways to look at those complex issues.
And hopefully it sparks some conversations right here in our community.
That's what we're all about here at Think and Act Locally. We want to empower you, our listeners, to make a difference right here where you live. We're all about bringing you actionable information that can have a real impact on our community.
Because change starts locally.
It does. And if you find value in what we do, if you want to support our mission, you can find more information on our website, thinkandactlocally.com/donate. That link's in the show notes. Thanks for listening.